Welcome to AI Today. I'm Dr. Alan Badeau. Last week, we walked through the house. We stood in the trading room where AI prices every game, every play. We stood on the live floor where wagers shrank from game to the next pitch, and the house edge got measured in milliseconds. We stood in the marketing room where the model stop studying the sport and started studying you. And we left with a sentence I asked you to carry for a week. And that was, the house no longer merely holds an advantage over the game. It holds an understanding of the player. Tonight, we're going to cross the counter. We're going to dip underneath the rail, I'm going to jump on the other side. Because here is a story of AI and gambling that looks like if you tell only the house's half, you know, it looks like a fortress. Perfect data, perfect models, a margin that grinds on forever and kills you. And if that were the whole story, this would be a really short series. But it's not the whole story. The same decade that armed the sports book also armed the customer. The models got cheap. The data got public. It's out there. The tools got friendly. They're a lot easier to use now. And the betting public that used to run on gut feelings and talk radio hosts and their gut feelings now are sitting in your pocket. And a class of machinery that would have qualified as a professional trading option probably even 15 years ago. So tonight, it's about the machinery. What it is. What it actually does. Where it genuinely works. And where, I'll say this plainly, you know, early. So nobody mistakes tonight for a sales pitch, okay? Where it quietly flatters you while the VIG does its patient work. So let's start with a little bit of history, okay? Because the bettor has always bought help. There's nothing new about paying for an edge or only about what the edge is made of or, you know, getting data from a newspaper or getting an insider track from the ball boy, for example, right? In the newspaper era, it was the tout sheet, right? It was a mimeographed page of pics from a man with a nickname and a phone number. In the cable era, it was really a handicap hotline. If you don't remember that, well, I just dated myself, but that's okay. You know, like $9 a minute for somebody to, they're locked for the week, you know, and they'd go crazy on it, right? And then in the internet era came, and it was the pick sellers website, or you could find it on YouTube, or, you know, there were a lot of good ones out there. When I was first starting, I was following, Bender Wins, right? That was a great one. And, Ryan was always very professional and would give you, you know, his thought process behind it and try to help you learn the process. But every single generation, it was the same sort of transaction. The bettor buys confidence and the seller keeps the fee, whether the picks land or not. Now, what's different today is that, you know, the product on the shelf is it's no longer a pick. It's a capability. Look at what's, you know, actually being sold in 2026, okay? Action Network, great example, one that I use. One of the largest sports betting media companies in the country. And it ships a tool called Playbook. It's a great tool if you use it the right way and you continue to use it. And, you know, the industry press, though, they describe it as exactly what it is. It's an AI assistant for betting. I didn't have to build it. I'm just using it. It's not a tip sheet. It's an assistant. You describe an idea in plain language. You can find it, you know, on a screenshot, a social post, whatever that is, a hunch about a player or something like that. And it turns the idea into a structured wager. And it's priced and placed against real markets. Now, the trade press, again, calls it a personal assistant for turning ideas into bets. And they call that category, the future of retail betting experience. Now, sit with that shape for a second, because I want you to remember what's going on, because it should sound familiar to you. So last week, we watched the sports book acquire a conversational layer, AI chat resolving the vast majority of the customer questions, assistance helping users buy parlays, for example. So tonight, the mirror image of that, though, is the better acquiring a conversational layer too. On both sides of the counter, the interface to the wager is becoming conversation with a machine. Regular viewers know that we spend an entire episode this season on what happens when machines become conversational partners, right? The trust, the rapport, the gravity of the voice that always answers. Every dynamic from the episode now applies to a product category whose entire purpose is to help you put money at risk. Now hold that, okay, don't freak out yet. Because it matters more, not less, as the tools get better. Now, the honest engineering question, are the tools any good? And here I want to give you a diagnostic answer, okay, in three layers, because the marketing will not. Now, this is not an advertisement for any tool, and again, there's always risk. So I'm not telling you to go out and bet and do all these other things. I'm just giving you an idea on the AI technology that's being used. So layer one, the general purpose chatbots. You know, a lot of bettors have discovered the same AI they use to draft emails will happily talk about tonight's slate. And the industry's own reviewers, they're the people who test some of these for a living, including myself, are surprisingly blunt about the limits. So general chatbots they're impressive technologies, right? They write, they convince you, but they lack real-time data and sports-specific infrastructure to really produce an actionable betting intelligence for today's game. A model with a knowledge cutoff doesn't know tonight's injury report. A model without a live odds feed doesn't know the price. And in a market, an opinion about a price is not an analysis. It's a conversation. And most of these are being driven by large language models that are the exact same performing tools that we talk about all the time. So keep that in mind. So layer two. It's really the specialized assistants. These are purpose-built tools with live data pipes, with player tracking, weather, line movements, injury feeds, all the stuff that we talked about in layer one. And they're synthesizing in seconds what used to take days or hours, in a spreadsheet to work and feel confidence with. This layer, though, is real and it is genuinely new. So think about deploying AI at the edge. Gambling is a perfect example of that. What the industry says bettors want from it is pretty telling, actually, because it's not a mystery model of picks. It's speed, personalization, help navigating complex betting types. The value prop has shifted really from the machine knows the winner to the machine does the research. And that shift from Oracle, to analyst is the single most honest thing I have seen about this market. Now, layer three, it's around the claims, okay? You will see accuracy numbers advertised in this space, 70%, 80%, 85% on game outcomes. Yeah, right. Last week, I told you to hold those claims very loosely, especially when the house vendors are making them, right? But the same discipline applies to when bettors are making them. Because here is the arithmetic, okay, that governs everything that we're going to discuss tonight. And I you know, I want you to pay attention to it because it's a key part of the math. So the Bethe's arithmetic, if you think about it, you know, the standard that you see, the -110 line, you know, that means that, you know, you're going to break even at roughly 52.4%. And the VIG is the opponent. So what that means is at a standard American price, okay, the -110 on both sides that you'll see, you don't need to win half your bets to break even. You need to win about 52.4%. The gap between 50 and 52.4 is the VIG. It is small. It is permanent. And quite honestly, it's the entire business model of the house that we toured last week. Every tool we examine tonight is, mathematically speaking, an attempt to close a 2.5-point gap against an opponent who reprices the market every damn second and learns from every bet. Plain and simple. Now, predicting winners at a high rate on games, everyone agrees is, you know, about as easy. Favorites win, right? Oh, yeah. Well, beating the price is the game. The machine that matters is not the one that predicts the outcome. It's the one that finds the mispriced outcome. And that distinction, outcome versus price, is the door to everything in our next segment. So here's the map for tonight. And it runs from retail to professional to really, I would call, revolutionary. This segment, the assistance, the democratization of research. Next, we're going to look at the edge hunters. And those are the tools that don't predict games at all, but scan the market itself for pricing mistakes and what happens to customers who get too good at it. Then we're going to talk about the syndicates, right? The full quant operations model against model, the arms race that we promised you last week. And finally, the financial territory. Billions are trading on contracts to answer to commodity regulators instead of gaming boards. And the oldest question in the industry, is it gambling or is it finance? And where it's headed, and quite possibly, to the Supreme Court. One decade ago, the better brought intuition to a knife fight with mathematics. Tonight, we find out what happens now that both sides have brought mathematics. When we come back, we're going to talk about the hunt for the edge, the quiet rule of this industry that nobody prints in the welcome bonus. The house loves the loser. They tolerate a talker. And they show the winner the door. So stay with me. We'll be back after a few messages from our sponsors. Welcome back to AI Today. I'm your host, Dr. Alan Badeau. And before the break, I drew a line between two kinds of machines. The machine that predicts the outcome and the machine that finds the mispriced outcome. Tonight, our second segment really is entirely on the far side of that line. Because this is where the serious bettor and how they're using AI actually operate. And the first thing to understand, though, is that they're serious. And these are serious tools that barely care about sports at all, though, which is really fascinating. What they care about is disagreement. Here's the structural facts that make the whole category possible, okay? So last week, we treated the house as one machine. In reality, it's dozens of machines, though, right? And dozens of licensed sports books, each running their own models, each paying attention to what others are doing, you know, its own risk book, its own promotions, each publishing each on the price of the game, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And those prices disagree. Now, they don't disagree by much. And oftentimes, they don't disagree for too long. But it is constant. One house may put it at 2.5. Another may put it at 2 and then get crushed by the number of bets that come in. Or 3 and 3.5 is a good example. Man, they put that line down to 3. The sharps come in, hammer it for a little bit. It goes back up to 3.5. To the fan, though, that disagreement, it's really trivia. You know, to a market engineer, and it's an entire opportunity. Because when book A prices a team at one number, and then the next book prices the same team at a different number, one of them is wrong. And you're allowed to bet, you know, at the window on that. Now, we call that line shopping, right? And it's gotten a lot more difficult, though, because, you know, sports books are asking for, you know, IDs, and they want you to have a player's card, and they want all these other things. But it really is the oldest discipline in professional wagering. Make sure you get the line at the right number. You always hear that sort of thing, right? And what AI changed is the scale. A human can now check 5 books before kickoff very easily if they have the apps on their phone. Software checks dozens of books across every single market, as long as it's legal in that market, right? Every prop, every alternative line continuously in the flags. And, you know, it sees those discrepancies in real time. Some books may offer different props. Some may not offer many props at all. It just really depends on what you're looking for. So the reference product, though, in this category, it's, you know, a good example is called OddsJam. And the reference for it is, you know, in the industry is very instructive, I would say, because sports media outlets flatly call it the gold standard of betting tools. It costs real money, okay? Around $200 a month if you're in the serious tier. It's worth it. But it's not selling picks. It's really a surveillance of the entire market itself. The feature I love the most is really about, you know, what it's a positive expected value finder. And that's a scanner that continuously compares odds against sports books and highlights wagers where the price of one offer is mathematically in the bettor's favor. So just to give you an example, so you have like plus EV betting. And so that's when you bet when the offered price beats the consensus probability, right? And the tools can scan dozens of these books continuously. That's a huge advantage. Now, I would want to try to make it even a little bit more concrete because, you know, the intellectual center of this segment is very important. So suppose the sharpest books in the world, the market consensus will say, they price an outcome as a coin flip. Any book, and for whatever reason, you know, a slow model, a promotional boost, an unbalanced risk book, whatever it is offering that coin flip at a price that pays you as if it were worth, we'll say, 45%. The machine doesn't know who's going to win the coin flip. It doesn't need to. It knows the price is wrong and that you systematically take wrong prices and put those in your favor. The same law of large numbers that pays the house actually starts paying you. And that's huge. Now, notice what just happened to the wager, though. There's no fandom in it, no narrative, no Sunday jersey, no gut feeling, no Army, Navy, always take the under. It's the arithmetic of an index fund weighted at a betting market. The professionals even measure their skill the same way a trading desk would. It's not by wins and losses this week, but by closing line value. Did you consistently beat the final, sharpest price the market settled on? beat the closing line over 1,000 bets, for example, or profit follows is a matter of statistics, right? Fail to beat it, no winning streak is going to save you. Alongside plus EV sits a pure cousin, and that's the arbitrage. And that's when two books agree, you know, disagree enough that you can beat both sides on, you know, the same window. And it's a lock of small guaranteed profit no matter what the outcome is. There's software out there that finds those too. And they close in minutes though, because remember last week, the book's own AI is watching the same market. It's going to see that too. So it's going to get, you got to do it really quick. So far tonight, it sounds like it's great news for the better, right? The tools are real. The math is sound. The edge exists. You got to be fast, but there are tools to help you be fast. Well, now comes the part of this segment that the advertisements leave out. And quite honestly, it's the part I want you to hear the most. The House knows about all this. And the House's response is not to outmodel the edge hunters. They show them the door. And I can even attest to some of that. But here is really an open secret of American sports betting. And it's discussed candidly in every professional betting forum and increasingly in the mainstream financial press, right? Recreational facing sports books, they limit winners. Win too consistently, even, you know, just betting in the same pattern of a winner, and your accounts will get restricted. They will start to limit the maximum amount that you can bet. Even though nothing illegal has occurred, the terms of the service allow it. The House is a private business, and it is under no obligation to keep serving a customer whose business is unprofitable. And who identifies the winners? Well, it's the same machinery that we toured last week. The models watching which accounts are beating the closing line, the systems flagging bet timing, market selection, stake sizing, the statistical finger point of skill. Last week, we saw the House's AI classify players into two things. And it's really, you know, they're trying to retain the profitable ones. This week, it's the mirror image. It classifies players in order to release the unprofitable ones. Same model, same signals, opposite doors. Now, I want to be very measured here because this is not all sports books, okay? Because there is a legitimate business argument on the House's side, okay? Risk management is what solvent companies do. And a book that lets sharps bet unlimited would be handing its margin to a trading desk. But I also want to name the asymmetry in it because it's the diagnostic heart of tonight's episode. The industry's public proposition is a contest of wits, right? It's beat the odds, win the money. Well, the operational reality is, you know, and it's at these recreational sports books is closer to this, quite honestly. And that's the contest is open to everyone who loses it. The moment the machine concludes you've actually won the contest is over for you. The bettor's AI can find the edge. It can't make the counterpart accept the bet. And we see it all the time. Like I said, I've been limited at many sports books and the max that I can bet. Or you go into a sports book and you want to hit a certain bet that is really in your advantage. And they'll limit the size that you can put on that, right? And so that's how they're managing their risk. that asymmetry is doing something, though, interesting to the ecosystem, okay? So it pushes the winners out of the retail books and really toward, you know, venues built on a different architecture. Betting exchanges, for example, where customers bet against each other and the operator just takes a commission. Indifferent who wins. Peer-to-peer platforms. And that's a really fast-growing industry as part of the market, with social betting among friends now being estimated, and, you know, by some industry analysts, that it's starting to dwarf the formal market in raw participation. And most, what I would say consequentially, is the prediction markets, the federally regulated exchanges, we'll spend some time on later in this show, where limiting a winner isn't just against the ethos. It's arguably against the structure of the financial market itself. Follow the skilled money. In other words, what it means is that it leads out of gambling and into finance. So hold that thread, though, because it's a rope we'll climb, you know, in the back half of the show. So let me close this argument with really a consumer diagnostic, and I'm going to state it as clearly as I can, because a meaningful share of this audience bets and deserves to know the engineering truth, I think. You know, the edge hunting tools, they're real, okay? And for every disciplined operator, they do exactly what they claim. But they are professional instruments, and professional instruments have professional prerequisites. Accounts at many books, a bankroll that can survive variance, record keeping, very important, tax awareness, the temperament to bet a price you have no feelings about hundreds of times and let the law of large numbers do the work. This is a part-time quantitative job. It's honorable work if you want to do it, right? It's not a shortcut. And anyone selling it as that, you know, they may have confidence, but they don't have the capability. And for everyone else, though, for the fan that does, you know, the Saturday parlays and, you know, one sentence takeaway of all the machinery, which is the cheapest edge is betting it isn't a model. It's a second price. Simplify comparing lines before you bet. The thing that the software can do at scale, it's free too. And it takes a minute and in one professional habit that requires no professionalism at all. So when we come back, though, we're going to climb the pyramid again, above the assistants, above the edge hunters. And we're going to talk about the syndicates. Full quantitative betting operations running money through the world's markets like hedge funds and rooting with interests in nothing, model against model. And it's the arms race that we promised. So you're watching AI Today. We'll be back in a few minutes after some messages from our sponsors. Welcome to AI Today. I'm your host, Dr. Alan Badeau, and we've got two segments in. We've armed the retail bettor with an assistant and a serious bettor, really, with a market scanner. Now we're going really to the top of the pyramid, and that's to the operations that were never really bettors at all, well, at least in a recreational sense, right? And that's the syndicates. And I want to start by dissolving a Hollywood image, okay? Because the reality is much more interesting than the myth, okay? The myth is, oh, everything is taking place in a smoky room and the gambler with a system and the fixer with a phone and, you know, yada, yada, yada. The reality in 2026, it's a quantitative trading firm. Data engineers, statisticians, software infrastructure, capital partners, right? Accounts, you know, their own and in the gray zones of other people's. Spread across books and exchanges worldwide. And they're all positions sized by an algorithm. Risk managed by a portfolio. And the largest of these, you know, operations, they're wagering sums annually that would register on a mid-sized, you know, asset manager's books. And they think of themselves in exactly those terms. Sports is simply the asset class. Now, what does their machinery look like? And I'm going to tell you from my experience as formerly part of one of these. It's structurally, and at this point, it looks just like the house's machinery. That's the symmetry the whole night has been building toward. Now, the syndicate builds pricing models, probability estimates for outcomes trained on the same categories of data that the books use, historical results, player tracking, situational factors, and each member of the syndicate can pass along any information that they glean or that they find could be potentially relevant. And it doesn't have to be specific to one game, for example. If you have your own AI running, you may be able to pass some of that information along too. And at the end, really, well, at the top end, I would say, you know, on proprietary data, you know, the books don't have. Some operations buy their own, you know, camera and tracking feeds and stuff, and some model referees, and some employ what I would say the industry calls courtsiders, right? You know, people physically at the venue transmitting events seconds before the official data feed. Because last week, remember, you got it two ways, right? Latency in the TV, it's an edge for the house. And the house's data advantage that they have from that over the public, it's not always an advantage over the syndicate with a person sitting in row three. Now, the syndicate runs execution systems, software that sprays wagers across many books at once potentially, and size is calibrated to avoid tripping the very detection models we discussed, you know, previously. It's really a cat and mouse orchestration layer. If you think about it, the books AI hunting for coordinated bettors and betting patterns, the syndicates AI shaping its footprint to look uncoordinated. Machine versus machine. And in the most literal sense, it's on television tonight. And the syndicate runs risk. Exposure limits, correlation algorithms, bankroll mathematics, the Kelly criteria discipline of never betting so much on a true edge that the variance kills you before the edge pays. Does that sound familiar? It's the house's risk engine from, you know, segment four last week, but it's rotated 180 degrees. So here's the question, though, that the symmetry can force, right? And it's the intellectual center of the episode. If both sides run models, if the book's engine and the syndicate's engines are drinking from similar data and pricing the same events, where does the edge live? Well, I got three honest answers for you, and I'm going to break it down as easy as I can. Answer one, there's a gap in between the machines, right? No model is the market. The market is the argument among all models. And the argument is loudest and sloppiest at the edges, just like every other type of AI. Obscure leagues, player props, betting on badminton, maybe a little table tennis, alternate markets, in-play moments where a book's automation is stretched thin across 200 simultaneous games. Okay, that's where it lies. The syndicates concentrate exactly where the house's attention is going to be most diluted. Deep liquidity in The NFL point spread is the most efficient betting market on earth. The 400th prop of the night is not. Edge lives in the shadows of the machine's attention. Answer two. It's in the information asymmetry. Honestly and, you know, dishonesty is obtained. The honest version is the courtsider, the proprietary camera, the betting injury, pipeline, all those things. The dishonest version is the fix. And here tonight's episode shakes hands with last week's segment on integrity monitoring. The AI watchman we described. The system scanning hundreds of thousands of matches looking for statistical fingerprints of manipulation exists in large part because syndicate scale money is what makes manipulation pay. The same quantitative sophistication that finds mispriced lines can find a compromised one. And I said last week, the watchman and the other runs on the same model. So if you add tonight's corollary, so does the burglar. The technology has no allegiance, only the mandate does. And you've heard that sentence on this show before. We talk about it all the time. Answer three. And this one should reframe how you see the whole industry, okay? Increasingly, the edge lives in access and it's not in analysis. Because here is really the quiet economic truth of the arms race. As the retail books perfect the art of limiting wagers, segment two, remember, the syndicate's scarcest resource is no longer alpha. It becomes the ability to get money down. Accounts, capacity, counterparties willing to take the other side at size. The best model in the world is worthless at a $50 limit, quite honestly. And that's why the professional money has been migrating for years toward exchange architecture venues, places where the operator profits from volume rather than customer losses. Therefore, it has no reason to shrink a winner. And that migration, follow it far enough and it walks straight out of the gambling industry completely, which is actually me. And it walks right into segment four, though. But before we go there, let me land this segment's diagnostic, because there's a lesson in the syndicate story that reaches well beyond betting, okay? And longtime viewers will recognize it as this show's home territory. And, you know, we've watched across two episodes a complete market ecosystem arm itself with AI. The house first, of course, you know, pricing, personalization, defending, that sort of thing. And the customer tonight, assisted, augmented, and at the top end, fully industrialized too. And the result of everyone acquiring the machine is not that everybody wins. It's that the game changed character. The recreational bettor faces sharper prices than his father did. The model saw to that. The skilled bettor faces shrinking access. And the classifier saw to that. The syndicates, they face markets efficient enough that its edge lives only in the gaps, the latencies, and the shadows. When both sides bring mathematics to a knife fight, the mathematics, it doesn't declare a winner. It raises the table stakes of competence for everyone and quietly transfers the decisive advantage from analysis, which is now abundant, to position, Who has the data first? Who has the capacity? Who owns the venue? We watched that same arc in high frequency trading. We described the same arc in cybersecurity, right? And the episode, the employee you never heard. Attackers, AI, defenders, AI, and the premium migrating to whoever controls the terrain. Arms races do not crown champions. They redraw the map. And the terrain that matters most on the new map of wagering is a kind of venue most Americans still haven't even heard of. And through, last month, its trading volume said otherwise, though. When we come back, we're going to talk about the new exchanges, the prediction markets, tens of billions of dollars, a federal regulator, a Third Circuit ruling, a proposed rule book, and the oldest question in industry. Is it gaming or is it finance? Now, it's carrying real constitutional weight. So stay with us. We'll be right back after a few messages from our sponsors. Welcome back to AI Today. In our final segment, and it's the one the whole night really has been building toward. Three times this evening, I have pointed at a door. The skilled money pushed out the retail books. Where'd it go? The syndicates hunting counterparties who won't shrink their limits. Where do they go trade? The wager itself, rebuilt as a financial instrument. What market does it list on? Behind that door, though, it's the prediction markets. And whatever you think you know about them, the numbers say the story has already moved past the debate about whether they matter, okay? Because here's the diagnostic picture, and I'm drawing it from congressional researchers and federal filings, okay? Not press releases, all right? So the two dominant platforms are Kalshi and Polymarket. Congressional Research Service figures put roughly $40 billion traded over Kalshi over the year through this past February. Yeah, that's a big number. And of that volume, roughly 87% was on sports. Not politics, not economics, sports. Yes, sports. Polymarket's volume ran in the mid 30 billions over the same time period, right? And with sports also as its largest single category. So Pew Research tracked the two platforms' combined monthly volume more than quadrupling in 8 months. From under $5 billion last September to roughly $24 billion in April. Yeah. And this summer's World Cup, what I've seen so far, it really is the biggest single event in prediction market history. And Kalshi alone, they commanded more than 80% of the regulated notional volume through the final. Yeah. And a company valuation that really has run from under $1 billion to north of about $20 billion in 2 years. That is impressive. So what is this thing? Okay, what is this thing that has grown so fast? Well, mechanically, a prediction market is an exchange for event contracts, okay? And a contract asks a yes or no question about the world. Will this team win tonight? and trades between zero and a dollar. Believe yes, you buy. Believe no, you sell. The price at any moment is the market's live probability estimate. When the event resolves, the contract pays a dollar or nothing. Now, notice three architectural facts, because each one answers a thread that we have already pulled tonight. So fact one, it's peer-to-peer. You're not betting against the house. There's no bookmaker on the other side. There's no trading desk managing a margin against you. The exchange matches buyers with sellers and takes a fee, which means the operator is structurally indifferent on who wins. The winner's dilemma from segment two, right? The skilled player is shown the door. It has no architectural home here. The exchange wants volume, and skill is volume. Fact two, it's a price. It's not a line. No minus 110, no vig, into every quote. The spread between buyer and seller is set by competition. And in deep markets, it's razor thin. For the plus EV hunters and the syndicates of, segments two and three, that's not a nicety. The whole game is, really the sharpest venue is the one where the price is the probability. Fact three. And this is where the ground starts to move under the entire gambling industry. It's federal. These platforms are registered with the Commodities Futures Trading Commission, the CFTC, the same agency that oversees futures and swaps. Earlier this year, the commission classified these event contracts as swaps under federal law, which produces a sentence I want you to hear in full, okay? In most of America tonight, you can take a position on a ball game through a federally regulated derivatives exchange governed by commodities law, not by your state's gaming board. That sentence alone right there, that really is a declaration of war, because the states heard it exactly that way. And just walk through the battlefield with me for a second, okay? Because this is one of the most consequential regulatory fights in American markets right now. And it's being fought over ball games. On one side, the platforms and the CFTC arguing that Congress gave the commission exclusive jurisdiction over swaps trading on federally regulated exchanges. Full stop. States need not apply. On the other side, you've got state gaming regulators arguing that a contract that pays when a team wins is a sports bet, but is wearing a suit. And that federal regulation doesn't preempt a century of state gambling law. The scoreboard, though, so far, we like to talk about scoreboards, right? Perfect for it. In April, the Third Court of Appeals affirmed an injunction barring New Jersey, the state that toppled the federal sports betting ban in 2018, remember that, from enforcing its gambling laws against Kalshi sports contracts. Other courts have reached similar conclusions. Illinois planted its flag the other way, with its gaming board issuing cease and desist letters to Kalshi, Polymarket, Robinhood's derivative arm, and crypto.com, right? And the United States and the CFTC responded by suing Illinois, arguing federal preemption. Massachusetts and New York are litigating. The platforms are banned outright in a lot of states, right? And observers across the legal press coverage on the same forecast we made last week from a distance, this boundary dispute, it has the Supreme Court written all over it. Now, Meanwhile, the referees are writing the rules mid-game, it seems like, because in June, the CFTC published a proposed framework. It was roughly 260-plus pages that would keep most sports contracts legal at the federal level while drawing lines to the gaming industry. It'll sound familiar, right? That no contracts on officiating outcomes, none on player injuries. The market most exposed to manipulation and insider information. The platforms have rewritten their rule books to import insider trading norms now. Congress has bills in the hopper about the government and who may trade these contracts at all. Piece by piece, the financial regulators building a gaming commission's toolkit, right? Because the products demanded it. And this show's purpose, though, why it belongs in an episode about AI, is that, you know, a prediction market is a probability engine powered by human conviction. Increasingly, though, by machine conviction. Algorithmic traders, model-driven funds, the syndicates of segment three, all pushing prices toward truth, because truth is where profit is. The result is that these markets have become, I would say almost accidentally, actually, public infrastructure. Live, machine-sharpened probability, you know, feeds on real-world events, cited by broadcasters and integrated into media empires. You've got partnerships with NASDAQ, with Dow Jones, major sports broadcasters. The wager, it's really industrialized by AI on both sides of this series. And it's completed a strange journey, though, right? Because now it's just become data. The bet grew up to be a forecast. Whether that's a triumph of markets or a casino annexing the financial system, you know, but hold that question, because it's going to be the opening argument for the final show in this series. The Ledger, then, is really four segments tonight. The assistant, research democratized, right? The machine is an analyst, not an oracle, and a conversational interface to risk that deserves your eyes to be open. The edge hunters, the market surveilled, right? Real tools, real math, real 2.5-point mountain that you have to climb, and a house that answers skill by closing the window. The syndicate, of course, the house was a machinery, it's mirrored. Model against model. And the discovery that when analysts become abundant, the edge migrates to the data, to access, and to the terrain. And now, a new exchange, the terrain itself, is just being redrawn. The wager relisted as a federal financial instrument. $40 billion finding the door that the industry couldn't close. Last week, we ended with a warning. The house keeps its edge in a model, right? And the model was trained on you. Tonight ends with the answer the market built. A better guy tomorrow, too. And where the models met, a new market was born. One that neither the house nor the state fully controls. So that leaves us with the only question this series hasn't answered, I think, and the ones about the people. But next week in our finale, the human cost of wagering machine that never sleeps, and the referees trying to write a rule book for it. The AI that can spot a problem gambler in its data and the unresolved question whether or not it has to act. And that's really the foundation for the Safe Bet Act. The state bills, the regulators, the treatment clinicians, the families. The Machine has had two full episodes. The final hour next week, it's going to belong to the humans. So before we go, the tailoring, as always, is Canali. A century of Milanese craft and the same lesson every well-built system teaches. The discipline is in the details that you do not see. So many thanks to Canali for addressing your host on AI Today. So here's a closing thought. Every arms race in this series has ended the same way, okay? The house built the machine held the margin, the better built the machine, a new one, and found an edge. And then the market built an exchange, and then the exchange became a forecast, and every step, the machinery got smarter. And at every step, though, one thing refused to transfer. That's the risk. The model can price the wager. It doesn't feel the loss. It can find an edge. It doesn't own the consequence. Every contract on every exchange we discussed tonight resolves, in the end, against a human ledger, a bankroll, a household, a name. The machine has never taken over analysis on both sides of the counter. The signature on risk, guess what? It's still ours. It's always going to be ours, okay? Which is precisely why the last episode of this series on gaming and AI belongs to the people holding the pen. So we've got an exciting show next week. For AI Today, I'm Dr. Alan Badeau. Guess what? The markets are open. The models are training. And as I'm sitting here in the Wynn Hotel in Las Vegas, going to the AI Today or the AI 4 conference, we'll see what happens next week. Because that's the human hour. So thanks for watching. We'll see you next week.